Hopefully you know by now that we're on a mission, a major mission at Plant Strong, to make it easy, delicious, and convenient to eat more plants. One of the most powerful tools in our toolbox is the Plant Strong Meal Planner. Members of the Meal Planner get access to hundreds of delicious, community-tested, whole food plant-based recipes that are all oil-free and made without refined sugar or excessive sodium. The Meal Planner lets you create and save personal menus, and you can reduce waste with our search by ingredient feature to help you find ways to use up what you have on hand. We also have interactive grocery lists that make it super easy to shop, along with cooking videos to help you gain new skills and confidence in the kitchen. You can even have your meal planned groceries delivered by Instacart right to your doorstep. Members get exclusive discounts at Plant Strong Foods and with other partner brands like Vitamix. Simply visit liveplantstrong.com and then click on the meal planner. Save $20 off the annual membership with the code PSSUMMER20. That's PSSUMMER20. Get Plant Strong. Season 2 of the Plant Strong podcast, as you know, has been centered on the theme, the heart of a hero. Thankfully, even in the midst of our unforeseen global crisis, there are always those who go against the status quo and who are unafraid to wade into difficult and uncharted territory in the hopes of finding solutions for our long-term health and making the path for the rest of us just a little bit easier to follow. Well, today's guests are some of my favorite heroes and yours, Adam Sudd and Tara Kemp, a dream team in the plant-based movement. For the last several months, Adam, a repeat guest and a great friend of mine, along with Tara, have been enveloped in a groundbreaking research and study into the far-reaching impacts that plant-based nutrition can have on addiction and recovery, not just to help people stay sober, but in all facets of recovery, resilience, self-compassion, physical health, and spirituality. Believe it or not, this study is the first of its kind and is backed and supported by an enthusiastic and reputable team of physicians and experts. This initial conversation took place last fall at my office when they were just starting down this path. And at the end of this interview, I have a live catch-up interview at my office with Adam to get caught up on their latest information and findings. If you're looking for a beacon of light for the future of the plant-based movement, look no further than Tara Kemp and Adam Sudd. They call their study the Infinite Study, which is wildly appropriate because these two have an infinite level of compassion, passion, commitment, and dedication to helping people reconnect with their true selves and rediscover their self-worth. If you don't have your ticket for PlantStock 2020, what are you waiting for? We've got 15 presentations from the rock stars of the plant-based movement. We've partnered with a world-class video team to give each of you a front-row seat to the tour of the farm inside and outside. Everybody will be getting a list of the meals for the weekend, along with the recipes and ingredients, so you can cook along with Ann, Jane, and myself for breakfast, lunch, and dinners. Know that each household ticket will allow you to view the whole weekend again and again and again. Know that partial proceeds are going to the Esselstyn Foundation, a 501c3, doing really wonderful work to spread the good news about plants. Visit PlantStock2020.com and sign up today. Here we are, season 2 of the Plant Strong podcast, and I've got Adam Sudd and Tara Kemp here. We're going to talk about some exciting research that you guys are both deeply involved in. But before we get into that kind of groundbreaking research that you're doing, kind of first of its kind, I'd love to just talk a little bit about how I know both of you. And I know both of you like different backgrounds. So I'll start with Tara. Okay. Tara, you and I think, if I'm not mistaken, we go back to Plant Stock.
Yes.
Going back to maybe 2012.
I mean, I attended the first ever Plant Stock.
Ooh.
And that was when we chatted. I went up. I was like one of the, there were like, I want to say maybe like five people total who were under the age of like 40.
Right.
And I was one of them. And that was when I came up to you and asked you if you needed any help because I really wanted to volunteer. And that's when I started writing for the Daily Beat.
Yes.
And then the College Greens.
Yes. And so you were there with a boyfriend at the time.
Yes.
And then also one of your best girlfriends, mm-hmm. right? So it was mm-hmm. three of you.
Yeah.
And you guys,
and we dragged our parents along.
Yeah. And then, and you guys became known as the College Greens.
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, you also, you did a little bit of an internship with Engine 2 and you even wrote a book.
We did.
And
we
what, did. Was the book, fun. What was the book about?
It was about helping kids to make the transition. So it was for parents and kids to do together. The first section was a lot of scientific research and background for parents to understand why this was a healthy way for kids to eat. And then the second section was recipes for kids and parents to make together. And the third section was, activities for kids to do, like coloring or word searches or, you know, grocery store scavenger hunts and things like that to help them enjoy the food. And
yeah, you guys did a really spectacular job on it. It was Thanks. Really thorough. And I think what maybe what we should do is we should put a link to that that book for people.
Yeah,
I mean,
man.
You know,
yeah, I mean, at the time when we first made that, it was such a feat to have put that whole thing together. And I remember we were all really proud of it.
Oh.
And I haven't probably looked at it in like 8 years.
No, it really is spectacular. And so since the College Greens, mm-hmm. you've gone on and you're now doing some really cool stuff in the plant-based space. Talk to me a little bit about what you're doing, but don't talk about the research you're doing.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have been very fortunate to work with a lot of different groups and work with a lot of the greats and the luminaries within the movement. I worked at the Physicians Committee for a few years with Neil Barnard. I worked at Forks Over Knives. And then most recently with Mastering Diabetes with Robbie Barbero and Cyrus Kambada, who I know that you recently had on the podcast as well. And that's been amazing. And so now I'm doing my PhD at Northern Arizona University. And like you said, doing some research that we'll get into later. But I'm also doing some coaching and hosting retreats. And that is amazing and so fun for me.
What are you getting your PhD in?
Psychosocial health, which is under the umbrella of interdisciplinary health. So, yeah, very fun stuff for me.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe we'll get it back into that in a little bit.
Yeah. If you need more explanation, I can go into that.
Yeah.
Lots of big words.
Say that one more time, the whole thing.
Psychosocial health.
Yep. Psychosocial health.
Yeah.
Which broken down means what exactly?
So it's the psychological and social aspects of your health. So I'm doing a program that is this larger umbrella program of interdisciplinary health. It brings together public health, psychology, and sociology. And so I'm taking, obviously, a perspective of nutrition, but I'm really looking at the psychological and social aspects of our health, really the intrapersonal, like the relationship with yourself, and interpersonal, the relationships that you have with others.
Mm. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I like it. Now, Adam.
Yes, sir.
You and I go back to 2010.
Yes.
When you came to an Engine 2 immersion. And for people that don't know, Adam was on season one.
Yes.
Of the Plant Strong podcast. If you want
to, go listen to the episode. It's always worth your time. Yeah. Adam's story is amazing.
Yeah. If you want to hear a deep dive, you can go there. But for those that don't know and are just joining us now, can you give us a Reader's Digest, version of kind of your journey through kind of recovery and,
sure.
and where you were when.
Yeah. So you and I met in 2010 when I attended the first or second Engine 2 immersion. And I was, over 300 pounds at the time. Did not know that I was dealing with diabetes and heart disease. And I was battling at the time a 10-year struggle with substance abuse. And unfortunately, reached a point to where I attempted suicide. And ended up going into rehab where I was diagnosed with diabetes and heart disease and a bunch of psychological conditions, and had to face the facts that I needed to do a lot of work on myself, both inner work and outer work. And the outer work included a plant-based diet, and the inner work involved a lot of self-love and self-acceptance, self-compassion work. And as a result, I was able to not only reverse my chronic illnesses and lose nearly 200 pounds, but at the same time, completely regain the experience of being alive and learning to love myself, how I show up every single day, and love how I move through this world. And yeah, it's just been an incredible journey.
Now, so when did you get this idea for this research, and what exactly is the research study that has never been done before that you are now going to talk about?
Yeah.
I want both of you to talk about it, obviously.
Well, sure. This first part of the question is going to be a fun answer for Adam.
This is really going to be fun because I was just thinking about this morning. Interestingly enough, 5 years ago, I was living in Nepal, and I was doing a session of yoga, and I was the only person there. So it was me and this yogi, and he asked me to project 5 years in the future. And I'd never allowed myself to do that before. It was something that was terrifying for me as a person in early recovery at the time. I'd only had about a year sober. So I didn't like to look that far ahead, but I did. And I got these flashes of being able to bring together the power of plant-based nutrition, self-love, and substance abuse recovery. And I went back to my where I was living at the time, and I wrote in a journal that I had that I'm going to prove that there is a powerful connection between plant-based nutrition and addiction recovery, but I'm not ready yet. That's what I wrote, and I put the book away. And then, because I knew I wasn't ready at the time, and I was going to give myself the opportunity to create an environment for myself where I was confident that I could do it. And then last year, the opportunity came about, and I found a treatment center willing to do this research study that we'll talk about. And amazingly, at the exact same time, Tara started her PhD work at NAU, and after
which dovetails in completely.
Yeah. And I didn't know Tara at the time when I was living in Nepal. We met about a year later.
Oh, that was only a year after Nepal that we met.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
Or 2 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And I just knew that Tara had to be involved, and amazingly, she had the opportunity to do it. And we are going to start the study this month, which is 5 years exactly from when I did that session with the yoga instructor.
That's a little bit, a little cosmic right there.
Oh,
pretty
man.
Incredible.
Wow.
Everything with this study has been pretty divine and
there's
coming
been a,
together.
A lot of amazing energy behind this.
Yeah.
Just the incredible people and passion and amazing, you could call them coincidences that have mm-hmm. fallen into place. Around this study, which we'll talk about.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, why don't we talk about the study?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So what is it?
So it's called, we're calling it the Infinite Study. And we call it the Infinite Study simply because the treatment center where we're running the research study is called Infinite Recovery. Terry actually came up with an amazing anagram for it. But what we're wanting to do is we want to investigate the effects that nutrition has on early addiction recovery outcomes. When we started, when I started my recovery, I noticed a profound change in myself as a result of not only addressing, how I move through the world in regards to self-love and self-acceptance, but the profound impact that food had on my ability to show up for myself. And we started to design the research study and came to understand that there's never been any research done on early addiction recovery outcomes in any diet whatsoever. And if you think about it,
and why do you think that is?
I mean, it was so surprising to both of us as we were starting to dig into the literature, and I was, looking for, okay, what has been done before and how can we do it differently or build on it? And it was like, oh, there's basic, I mean, there is a foundation to an extent. We know that, for instance, food plays a role when people are initially in recovery, that it's something that they can structure their day around because in the past, you know, when they were in the depths of the addiction, their day was structured around how am I going to get the drug, where am I going to get the drug, you know, when am I going to use, etc. And food is something that, you know, you eat at least 3 times a day. And so it's another thing to, you know, structure your life around. It's also something that very often becomes a substitute for the drug because it's an easy thing that when you first haven't developed new coping mechanisms, you know, it's something that you can utilize to numb or to, you know, get whatever you were needing. And so we know that that happens. We know that food does play a role in that, whether it's weight issues or just overeating or anything like that, that food plays a role during recovery and that it's an important part of it. We also know that when someone in recovery is taught about nutrition principles, that their eating habits improve. But how does that actually affect their recovery from the addiction? Mm-hmm. We don't know. Yeah. There's literally never been a study to show that. And that was mind-blowing to us because, as Adam has said before, you know, this is an affliction that affects the physical body so intensely. And most people, when they enter addiction recovery, their body's in a state of malnourishment, whether that's the malnourished obese or whether that's truly being, you know, emaciated. But if you're treating your body with, you know, if you're addicted to drugs, you're not taking care of your body and you're not thinking about nutrition in the large majority of cases. And it affects your body's ability to assimilate nutrients and to do all sorts of things. So the fact that we aren't looking at nutrition was just astounding to both of us.
Yeah. Mm. And I think it comes down to the fact that, and we talked about this, I think on the season one when I was on, is that we treat addiction from a dependency model. That we look at someone and say, okay, this person is addicted to heroin. Their problem is heroin. Let's create an environment where they can do anything other than heroin and call it success. And I'm okay with the idea of saying we need to get this person off of heroin. That's obvious. But to say that heroin dependency is addiction is it's a misstep. Mm-hmm. Because anybody in addiction recovery, myself included, when people told me drugs were my problem, I just had to say, I'm sorry, drugs have never been my problem. They've been my solution to not knowing how to love myself and not knowing how to show up best for myself. I don't know how to live with myself or love myself properly. Drugs were my ability to
So the problem then is not knowing how to love yourself?
That's a huge part of it. But what I'm saying is that they look at someone who's addicted to heroin and say, let's create an environment where they can do anything other than heroin and call it success. And I don't believe that that's success because that's not treating the underlying issue of how do I show up best and live my life in a way that allows me to move forward with positivity to where life is meaningful enough that heroin, Adderall, cocaine, drugs in any form, sex, whatever, is no longer necessary to escape a life that's become too painful.
So is that the problem then?
I think so.
Well, and it's interesting because there is so much disjointedness within it because, as Adam said, you know, we treat it from a chemical dependency model today in most cases. You know, there is the 12-step program, and though they know that there's this extra part of it, but so often it's just like, are you using or are you not using? Mm-hmm. And that is sobriety. Whereas when you look at the way that it's actually documented, it's, you know, within the DSM-5 and things like that, it's like we know that it is categorized as a mental and behavioral health issue. We know that the root is psychological and emotional, but then we treat it from this chemical dependency standpoint, which doesn't really make sense. And that's why for our study, we're looking at these mental and emotional and spiritual factors as well as the physical outcomes. Yeah. And our primary outcome is resilience, because to us, that's what's really going to foster sobriety, is helping someone to be in a state where when life gets difficult, they have healthy coping mechanisms to help them get through that period without reverting back to the drug.
Yeah.
Wow. This all sounds so incredible. And like you, I am actually shocked that a study like this has never been done before. Can you explain the actual study design and how you're going about doing it?
Yes, absolutely. So it's a randomized controlled trial, which is the gold standard in research. And for anyone who doesn't know, having randomization helps to make the research generalizable because it shows that there is no inherent bias in creating the different groups. So when someone joins the study, they will be randomly assigned to either a treatment group or a control group.
So the control group then is going to be fed McDonald's and Burger King.
No, they'll be eating basically
whatever
is already served at the recovery center, which is actually very, you know, nutritious, honestly. This recovery center has a much higher standard of nutrition already in comparison to other recovery centers. So if we were to be working with a different recovery center, we probably would see greater differences between the two groups, which, you know, is a bad thing for the research, but a great thing for the people involved. And so we just have to take that, you know, humanistic love approach and be like, hey, this is great for them. And so, you know, one group will be eating the standard diet that is offered there and basically have no restrictions, no guidelines. It's just, you know, eat what is offered. And then the treatment group will be eating a whole food plant-based diet. So a plant-based diet that is
a plant-strong diet.
Yes, exactly. Plant-strong all the way. So minimally processed, no oil, all of that.
So whole food, plant-based, low-fat.
Low-fat.
Yes, low-fat for sure.
Okay.
And yeah, and so, and then there's also a nutrition education component. So the control group will be getting nutrition education that is just based on the standard American diet, the dietary guidelines offered by the U.S. government, and then the treatment group will be receiving nutrition education. This is once a week. It's like 60 to 90 minutes per session, and they will be understanding the scientific foundations as well as the bigger picture perspective of a plant-based diet.
How large is this group going to be?
We're planning to have ideally 100 participants, but we'll see. And it's rolling admissions. So this is going to be happening over the course of the next year or so. And we'll basically have admission rolling for 1 year. And then if we reach 100 participants before that, we'll stop. Otherwise, we'll just do it for 1 year and see how many we get. And we really don't know. We have, you know, there's no way to know yet how many people will sign up. We're planning to start recruiting in a week or two. And we'll see from there. We'll get a good idea in the first month or so how many people that are coming through decide to sign up and join the study. But we're hoping that it will be a lot because the recovery center itself is very supportive and very excited, and they really want to encourage as many people as possible to join.
And how many people are at this particular recovery center?
Right. So the current recovery center, there's two houses. One holds about 18 people, and the other one holds 36 people, because they just opened a new facility in Liberty Hill, which is this amazing 97-acre ranch, and they will be transitioning everyone to the ranch facility and turning the current facility into their detox wing. But what I think is really exciting is that, like Tara mentioned before, is that we're not looking at sobriety as an outcome, because this is a research in the early stages of recovery. So we're looking at those mediating factors that go into creating a foundation for strong recovery. How do these different diets impact your blood biomarkers? How does it change your gut microbiomes? This is a microbiome study. And how do those changes relate to validated scales of those factors of recovery that are so vital and so important? Things like depression, anxiety, eating disorder, resiliency, spiritual growth, self-compassion. These are the factors that really strengthen one's ability to sit in those uncomfortable moments and have the resiliency to move through it with grace, right, and not revert to old behaviors that are no longer serving them.
So the thinking is that by transitioning to a whole food, plant-strong diet,
yes,
it will, because you have a stronger microbiome, because you're feeling like a jillion bucks, because you have greater mental clarity, all these things, you'll have greater resiliency to kind of get through the tough times?
Yeah,
it's going to take an early recovery?
It's more than that. It's also, there's a subconscious understanding that when you sit down to a plate of food that you know is healing your body, that in and of itself can be an affirmation of recovery, that can be an incredible basis of self-efficacy, that can say to that can be a person's statement three times a day, that today is about being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Today is about, how do I show up and say I'm worthy of this, even though for the longest time I felt I wasn't. Today I am, and I'm going to live in that space. And then also know that the nutrition that you're putting in your body is creating an environment within yourself to make those shifts and to create the new neural pathways that allow you to be like I said, resilient and being comfortable being uncomfortable, which is going to be such a huge part of an individual's life for that first year of recovery.
Yeah, so it's several fold deep.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I always remember that I love about, you know, going back to 2000 and probably 16 when you first gave or 15 when you first gave a talk at one of our immersions, was how that by you eating these whole nutritious, wholesome plant-based foods three times a day, you were basically telling yourself that I'm worthy. Mm-hmm. I deserve this. I love myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how that little act consistently, meal after meal after meal, day after day, then kind of has an exponential effect.
Exactly. I mean, every action that we take sends a message to ourselves. So when you're feeding yourself those nutritious foods, you are sending yourself that message that I am worthy of these things. I am someone who takes care of myself. I am someone who values my body and my health and my nutrition. And it's a cyclical thing as well, because as someone starts to experience that mental clarity, as someone experiences, you know, the understanding of, oh, I know how to take care of myself, as someone starts to drop weight, sees their cholesterol lowering, things like that, that also in turn breeds more self-esteem and makes them want to continue. And obviously we don't know if these things are definitely going to happen. That's why we're doing the research. You know, we can look at to Adam's story and see how it has affected him. We can think about ourselves and how this dietary approach has affected us each in such amazing ways. But that's why we're looking at all these different factors, and it'll be interesting. It'll be fun. And even from the spiritual perspective, you know, as someone is learning about a plant-based diet and they're understanding, oh, food is not just between me and the food. It's not just me and the calories or me and the nutrients. It's also this bigger picture perspective of how it affects the environment. It's an extension of a value system, and it helps to build that sense of connection, not only with yourself, but with the world around you. And a sense of disconnection is a core root of addiction. And so as someone is building that sense of connection and they're showing up for the world in a way that feels good to them, in a way that they're proud of, in a way that they feel connected to that greater whole, we're also hoping that that can facilitate resilience.
That's exactly what I was about to talk about.
Beautifully said.
Exactly what I was about to talk about, because if you were to really look at a person who's in the throes of addiction and really struggling, if you could ask them to honestly tell you how they felt, and I'll talk from my personal experience, they feel broken, forgotten, and unacceptable to the world, right? Because they believe that they're doing their best and they can't get a handle on things. They must be the flaw in the system. And because they're a flaw, no one wants them around, which makes them feel forgotten, which is it's a crippling experience. And you also feel unacceptable to others, to the world around you. You're not only not of service, you're a detriment to the greater goings on that was once incredibly meaningful to you, a connection that meant so much. And what I really love about what a plant-based diet did for me was that it completely shattered that belief, because I believed I was broken. That's why I could never do well. But by adopting a plant-based diet, I saw all these things that I believed were a personal flaw in me start to reverse, which made me understand that I am not broken, that I am worthy of reconnecting to those truly meaningful bonds in life that hadn't forgotten me. I had forgotten how to connect to them. And that the fact is that they at no point never wanted me to be a part of it. I had just simply forgotten how to be a part of it. And food was that avenue that allowed me to relearn and rediscover, sort of remember. That's why I like to say so much, is that recovery is not a transformation to a new version of yourself. It's a practice in remembering who you've always been before the world got its hands on you. And food allowed that environment for me in order to learn those things and relearn those things that I'd forgotten.
Boy, you guys are so impressive. I'm just sitting here going, wow, this is the next generation, you know, just like coming up through all the plant, all the plants. But so, yeah, do you want to say something?
I was just going to say, I mean, Adam and I, one of the beautiful things about getting to do this research together, it just feels like such a beautiful collaboration, because since the first time that we met, we just have this shared perspective on these things, about this human condition, about the process of growth. And even though Adam has his story with addiction, I've just always felt that his story is just a human story.
Yeah.
It's this research on addiction is not just going to have implications for the world of addiction recovery. It will have implications for us as human beings, because we're all going through the process of finding acceptance with the parts of ourselves that feel unacceptable to the world and that we feel shame or self-criticism for, and learning to build healthy coping mechanisms to deal with things when life gets difficult, and learning how to show up for ourselves and make peace and have a peaceful, beautiful inner world. And it's all about that relationship with ourselves that then, as we build and strengthen, enables us to show up even more fully for the world. And to me, that's addiction recovery, but it's such a good microcosm for what it's like to be human in this world in general.
Yeah,
and
I really like what you talked about when we first started talking about this. You know, you said what you find so fascinating about addiction recovery is that it forces an individual to do the inner work today that every human being ends up needing to do at some point.
Yeah.
Because with someone struggling with substance abuse, tomorrow is very much so not guaranteed. I know that that's a fact for everybody, but it's much more extreme in that situation. And right now they want us to accept that I'm addicted to Adderall because I'm an addict. Or I'm addicted to this because I'm an addict. Or I'm suicidal because I'm, you know, mentally ill. Or depressed because I'm mentally ill. And I really just, I'm not a fan of that way of thinking. Mm-hmm. That when you really look at the situation that's occurring, a person is an addict because they're a human in pain. And a person is suicidal because they're a human in pain. And a person is depressed because they're a human in pain. Mm-hmm. And when we can stop trying to define people by what they struggle with, maybe we can start to see that they just need someone to listen to their needs. And then we can start to say, oh, your needs make sense. Mm. Your pain makes sense. And then we can stop this dependency model focus, and we can start to look at the human and how do we best serve a human in recovery. And food is a part of how a human exists. So let's investigate how to best serve that person in regards to food so that their recovery can start to reconnect them to what's truly meaningful, so that the pain becomes less and less and less, and they start to feel that joy and that self-love and be able to be in pain and be okay with it.
As Adam says, food is how a human exists. So let's investigate how to best serve that person in regards to the food they eat. The same is true for your pet, and thanks to the work of our partner, Wild Earth, they are serving the needs of our dogs in the best way possible. Wild Earth dog food is packed with clean protein sources, high-quality prebiotics, and dietary fibers, all to ensure a healthy gut for your pup. No junk meat and no fillers here, just real food sources for your dog's health and well-being. Scroll down to view the show notes or visit plantstrongpodcast.com and click on the Wild Earth banner to claim your exclusive offer for up to 50% off your dog food purchase.
Who are some of the other people that you've brought in to be part of this research study?
So amazingly, we have quite an incredible team.
The best team ever.
The best team ever. So Tara is the lead investigator.
Okay. And for people that don't know, what does that mean exactly?
That basically means that I developed the study protocol, obviously with the help of my advisors and other mentors and, you know, people on our team. But I developed the research design and protocol, and as we are gathering the data, I am the person who is overseeing that and making sure that it's all coming in as needed. And then once we are starting to really have that data gathered, I will be analyzing it, putting it together. I'll be the lead writer on all of the manuscripts and things like that. I'll be the one that is taking that data and turning it into the narrative that we want to share with the world.
Yeah. And we have Drs. Dean and Aisha Sherzai.
Okay. Who are they and why are they important?
Well, so funny enough, Tara and I...
And they were on the first season of the Plant Strong podcast.
So if for the listeners who are not aware of Dean and Aisha Sherzai, in my opinion, and I know Tara feels the same way, in a list of top humans on the planet, they are among them. They are some of the world's leading neuroscientists. They're the authors of the Alzheimer's Solution. They run the Healthy Minds. They have a nonprofit called Healthy Minds Initiatives, and they do the Brain Health... Is it called the Brain Health Clinic at Loma Linda University?
Yeah, I forget the exact name, but they have a Brain Health.
I think it's
research
the Alzheimer's Prevention and Brain Health co-directors at Loma Linda. Yeah.
So they're the leading authority on the understanding of how lifestyle impacts cognitive function through the aging process, and so their understanding of how nutrition plays a role in cognitive decline and cognitive repair is bar none. And I'd met them at PlantStock, not this year, but last year. And that's when I was first starting to think about the study. And I walked up to them and introduced myself. And we hit it off really well. And I asked them, I said, is there any, do you know, in doing your research, are you aware of any studies that show the benefit of nutrition on addiction recovery? And I remember Dean's response, like it was yesterday, he goes, unfortunately, there is no research showing any benefit of nutrition on addiction recovery outcomes because it's never been studied.
Because it's never, those last five words are very important.
Yeah. Very important. Yeah. And I told him that that was something I was getting ready to start doing. And I asked him if he'd be willing to share any of his research just on cognitive function and nutrition. And their response was, absolutely. We're going to help you 100%. They created a Google Drive. They sent me all of their research. And I was sort of consulting with them in the beginning just for help. And I remember Tara and I were talking like, you know what? Maybe we should ask them if they would like to be co-authors on the study. And so I got on a call with them, and they had been just amazing. We were on video calls constantly trying to create the best design, and they were so helpful. And I said, listen, you know, I really appreciate you. Tara and I really appreciate the consulting that you guys are doing with us and helping us do this. But do you have any interest in co-authoring the paper? And their response was, absolutely. And this is something that's so important. And so I asked them, I said, you know, what can I offer you in order to make this happen? They said, you don't have to do anything. We're on your team. And they have just been the most incredible support for us. And it's really elevated the study to a completely different level because of the esteem and the recognition that their names carry.
Yeah. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, with the Sure's Eyes, it's like, 2.5-3 years ago, never even heard of the Sure's Eyes. And now all of a sudden, you know, especially if you're in the plant-based world, you cannot move without seeing them somewhere.
And especially because I think Aisha's been on Dr. Oz like 10 times.
something.
They're just, to call them a force of nature would be an understatement.
Yeah. And it's not just Dean and Aisha. It's the whole family.
The whole family.
Yeah.
Alex and Sophia
kids
are just
incredible as well.
Yeah. They're, I mean, I look at them, I'm like, what a promise for the future, right?
So true. Yeah. Well, you know, and their whole family mission is to reduce suffering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So every day they get up as Team Sure's Eye, and you know they're doing such amazing work. So who else? Who else do you have?
So we have a young doctor named Dr. Frank Cusimano, who was doing his microbiome study PhD work at Columbia University, and interestingly, I had just done an episode on a podcast called Plant Proof, and we talked about the study, and then he reached out to Tara and I via Instagram and was like, hey, listen, I saw
social
you guys,
media world coming through.
I see you guys are doing a study that involves microbiome. Do you have a microbiome specialist on the team? And interestingly, we didn't at the time. It was something that we were searching for
someone again, who would be able to help us with that.
Everything coming together.
Yeah.
And I was in Costa Rica at the time, and so I called Tara. I was like, this is your language. You get on the phone. You talk to this Frank guy who I'd been following for a while on Instagram. And she calls me back like an hour later. And I thought she was crying at first. but she was just laughing.
Excited.
She was laughing. She was so excited. She's like, he's so in. And we're using the Wang Laboratory at Columbia University, which is one of the most advanced microbiome labs in the world. Mm. And his understanding, he's plant-based himself, and his understanding and his passion for microbiome work is just
so
unbelievable.
For people that don't know,
and
let's keep this relatively brief, but what's the microbiome? And I mean, can you give me a quick answer on that?
Yeah, sure. So the microbiome is basically the microflora, the microorganisms that live in our gut. And we are very early on the brink of understanding just, you know, as a scientific community in general, we are very early in the stages of really understanding what the effects of this microorganism community that lives in our gut, how it affects our bodies and our minds. But we know that it does. We know that there's a huge connection to our weight, to our health overall, to how we assimilate nutrients, to our brain health, to our mental health.
Cravings.
Yes, to all of it.
And as well as emotional health.
Yeah, literally just it affects everything. So, and so we're taking fecal samples at various points to understand how the gut flora is changing based on the dietary protocol or not. And really looking at how that then correlates to these other components that we're looking at, like how does that affect the depression and anxiety scores? How does that affect weight and cholesterol? How does that affect, you know, all of these things? So
yeah.
And if it's very exciting.
Yeah. And let's just say that we are comprised of 10 trillion cells,
yeah.
right? Your microbiome is comprised of 100 trillion
right,
cells.
Right, 10 times more than that.
10 times more. And do we have any, like, any idea on how quickly our microbiome starts to
very fast
transition?
Fact, when the way that we're doing is day one, you do a fecal sample, and day five, you do a fecal sample because it's that fast.
And we were even going to do day three, and then we were like, oh, well, let's just say day five just in case. But our initial plan was to do 0.0 and then day three. But we switched it to day five.
I've even heard that the microbiome is considered like the lost organ. It is, you know, what connects our guts to our brains. I mean, it's anyway.
I mean, if you think about the fact that in terms of physical health, everything comes down to cellular mechanisms, right? To some degree, and the majority of cellular mechanisms that occur aren't us. They're this microbiome. How could it not have a profound impact on how we move through the world?
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it's starting to become a new field and avenue of research. But like Tara said, it's so new. And it's really exciting because of how new it is.
So
I wanted to say one more thing, which is to, you know, going back to the research team, just to give a shout out to my advisor, Jay Sutliff.
Oh, absolutely.
He has been an incredible support in this process and such a good mentor to me. And I mean, I took a leap in reaching out as an early PhD student to bring in a new study because that's not something that's typically done. Typically, PhD students will just support the work that's already being done at a university. So for me to come in and say, hey, I have this new study idea that my friend wants to do with me, and for him to, you know, it was a leap for him as well to say, okay, let's do this and we'll take it on together. And he's been an incredible support, and he is amazing in his own right in the plant-based research space or in the research space in general. I just wanted to include him in that team shout out.
Well, yeah, there's been a lot of people that have also helped us. And Dr. Elizabeth Winings helped us out really early on with really like, how are we going to go about doing this? Like, what do we need to look at?
And Gigi, our statistician, she's been incredible. You know, there's a whole team behind this study and we're just two voices here,
So let's say that I'm, at the Liberty Hill Recovery Center. Is that what it's called?
It's called the Ranch.
The Ranch. Okay. Yeah. Let's say I'm at the Ranch and I get assigned to the control group that is not getting the plant-based meals. Are they all, I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is, so you got these people, you got the two groups. Are they going to be eating together? Are they eating separately? Because I could see this being very divisive.
Yeah.
That was a major
the concern of ours.
Yeah.
We spent
a lot of time going over how we're going to make this effective.
So,
we really didn't want people to feel more isolated in what they were doing.
Community is such a huge part of early recovery, to feel connected and not feel separate. So this was something that we spent a lot of time going over. How are we going to create an environment where they don't feel isolated? They don't feel divided.
Yeah, and so...
So how do you do that?
What we essentially decided to do is batch randomization. So when people come in, we will... It's still randomly done, but we will have groups at a time. So say in 1 week, 5 people sign up. All 5 of those people will be put into the same group. And then the next week, if 6 people sign up, all 6 of those people get put into a different group. And so there will always be 2 different groups of people who are going through the study at one time, but we don't want anyone to ever be alone in what they are doing.
And then how does mealtime work? You guys, are people eating together? Are you going to have the standard American diet?
Yes.
And then the plant-based people eating at the same tables, different tables?
Yeah, it's going to be all in the same area. It's going to be controlled, right? So individuals, let's say the treatment group, they would come in and be served their food, and we do food photos so that we know what they're eating, how much they're eating, when they're eating. But interestingly, we really don't see it as being like that much of a point of contention, because you're not going to be alone. You're going to be with a group of people, and it's a smaller than average size treatment facility where there's such a huge, every other thing that you do is all about connection and community. So we don't really see it as being the one thing that's going to break that. I actually believe that we're going to see people being very supportive of it.
And I mean, we'll see what happens. Yeah. Like in the future, it would be ideal to have two separate centers, you know, one that is right. entirely doing one and another that is entirely doing the other. But we didn't have that opportunity, and you kind of just
have we don't
to
have
work
it yet
with, where, yeah. with what you have. But something that we didn't mention that I think is also an important part of the research design that is advantageous and just has been an awesome opportunity is that this recovery center is the full continuum of care. So we are having people, as soon as they exit detox, they'll be recruited to the study. And if they start, they have about 3 weeks of inpatient where they live at the facility. There's, you know, it's basically a very entirely controlled environment. Mm. And, you know, they are eating what they are being fed, and we have the full control over what the menu is and how their day looks. And then after that 3 week point, approximately, they have another 7 weeks of the intervention, and that is when they're an outpatient. So they're still spending the majority of the day there, but they're eating breakfast and dinner outside of the facility, and then lunch they pack themselves. And so they're eating on their own. And so we are still doing 24-hour dietary recalls to track, you know, what they've been eating, and we're still running all of the measures in terms of like physical, mental, emotional, spiritual health. But they're on their own. So we've got the first 3 weeks of this controlled environment, and then the next 7 weeks of tracking, do they stick to it? Does this work? And so I think that is really exciting to have both of those environments being tracked as they head into sober living.
Yeah,
right. And so you obviously have the menus all figured out.
Yeah, we have.
Are they rotating around sweet potatoes, oatmeal, and rice and beans?
It's actually a pretty diverse menu. I just finished putting it together the other day, and it's, you know, we've got all sorts of different cuisines, all sorts of different, you know, it's.
But you have it broken up like by what, 3 week periods or a month,
it's
or
a four,
just
week,
four week,
week, four
yeah,
week
it's a
menu.
4 week
four
menu.
Week that rotate mm-hmm. that would rotate mm-hmm. around.
And in fact, you know,
and there's a different lunch and dinner every single day for 4 weeks.
Yeah, and you know, Brenda Reed, she helped us with training the staff and helping us come up with the how we're going to feed. We very much base it on the engine to immersion sort of style of like you have individual ingredients that you put on a plate and you sort of assemble food onto a plate rather than having being, you know, like every day.
Well,
like lasagna.
Well, that was the initial plan, but now it's full recipes.
Yeah.
Cool.
So.
What was that anagram, that cool anagram that you were talking about earlier?
So Infinite is investigating nutrient dense food intervention to nourish increased treatment effects.
Yeah, that just rolls right off the tongue. You guys, I know you got an interview to get to.
Yes.
I just can't say how proud I am of you, Adam, of you, Tara, and the contributions that you guys are making in this space and then beyond this space. Mm. When I think about so many people that are, as we just talked about, not happy for whatever reason, trying to find value, trying to, you know, feel like they're doing important work moving through this life, and the number of people that are suffering from addictions mm-hmm. to opioids and you name it. I don't think that this work that you're doing, and I think the results that are going to come from it, could come at a better time. Yeah. So thank you for being such courageous, you know, thought leaders, and making this come to fruition. It's huge.
Thank you, Rip.
Thank
that
you.
Means the world.
Yeah, it really
and
does.
Your support in both of our lives. I know that we both value your place in our lives, and we love seeing what you're doing, and you're an inspiration to both of us so much.
Very much so. I wouldn't be alive without you, so, you know, it's but, you know, and for those who want to follow along with what we're doing, my nonprofit is funding the research. And so you can go to the website, which is plantbasedforpositivechange.org. And as the research is going on, we'll be posting. Right now we have a video that talks more about it in depth, and you can follow along with what we're doing. Mm-hmm. If you want to make a donation to the nonprofit, you can as well. All the donations are going to go towards the research study.
Wow. Wow. You guys, thank you. With that, peace, take my lead. Peace, engine two, keep it playing strong. Yeah! Adam lives about 5 minutes from my office, and so he was kind enough to zoom on over and get me caught up on where he and Tara are right now, 6 months into their infinite study. Here you go. All right, I am here with Adam Sudd. Adam, gosh, the last time that you and I were sitting at this table was with Tara.
That's right.
It was November 14th, believe it or not.
Last year.
And we were talking about the research study that you and Tara and the Scherzis and everybody were embarking on.
Yes.
And it's now, you know, at least 6-7 months later, we're in the midst of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to get an update on where you guys are in your research study. And just, can you give me just a quick 30-second encapsulation as far as what the research is?
Yeah. So, yeah, we actually started the research study, officially began January 1st of this year. So we're in the seventh month of it right now. And what the study is essentially investigating is the impact of nutrition and nutrition education on early addiction recovery outcomes. So amazingly, and we talked about this in the when we met earlier, this has never been investigated. They never investigated how nutrition impacts the mediating factors of early addiction recovery. So your mental health outcomes, as well as your physical health outcomes in regards to strengthening those factors that create, hopefully, long-term recovery. And the treatment diet is a plant-based diet. And then we have nutrition education to support that diet. And the control diet is what they're already serving, which is an elevated Western diet. It's meat, it's eggs, it's dairy. It's a huge reduction of refined processed foods. But again, it's a Western diet. And so we've created a nutrition education to support that protocol as well. And then we look at how each of those impact various blood biomarkers, microbiome changes, and how those changes relate to changes of measuring anxiety, depression, self-compassion, resiliency, spiritual healing, eating disorder, mania, obsessive compulsive drug use. Essentially, how does what you put into your body and your understanding of what it does for you, the self-efficacy that's gained from the knowledge of how food impacts your entire self, create a stronger foundation for which an individual can recover upon? Mm. So it's a pretty incredible study.
It just gets me excited just hearing you like encapsulate all that in one fell swoop. And so where are you now, 6-7 months in?
This is month 7, and every single piece of data that we're capturing is completely novel, right? There's never been a study of any kind ever done on this exact, scenario, right? No one knows what diet does for an individual in early addiction recovery in a treatment center. It's never been investigated. So even the control diet is completely novel data, right? It is a first of its kind research study, not just the plant-based diet, all of it. And, you know, we have some early results back. And what we've discovered is that in the 10-week intervention, because it is a 10-week intervention, the first 3 to 4 weeks are within the hospital rehab setting. The following 6 to 7 weeks are in sober living, is that the average individual is dropping significant cholesterol levels with a greater drop in the treatment group. Triglyceride levels are dropping with a greater drop in the treatment group. The anxiety, depression, resiliency scales are doing better in everyone with a greater result in the treatment groups. We're seeing amazing qualitative data. So this, we're capturing the actual data on biometrics, but we're also capturing the stories of how these people feel about the recovery they're experiencing. And, you know, we've got people saying, this isn't my first, my second, my third time in recovery, but this one's different. And that individual is speaking about being on the plant-based diet, that it is allowing them to connect to something greater than themselves. They feel a connection to nature. They feel a spiritual connection to themselves. They experience a mental clarity that they haven't experienced previously. And so someone could say, well, that's their fourth time in recovery. Well, we're also hearing that in people, it's their first time in recovery. We're also hearing it from people who this is their second time. It's a common thread that we're hearing from people on the treatment diet. And, you know, we look at work from Dr. B about brain fog and what happens when you start to increase your fiber intake and how it repairs the blood-brain barrier. And we're seeing it, but we're seeing it and how it plays out for someone who really is experiencing some dysregulation with their mental clarity and how that impacts their emotional health and how that is can either make things more difficult or more empowered in recovery.
But you can't tell me that you're surprised by any of these results.
I'm not surprised, but at the same time, I'm so excited because we could make amazing assumptions based on, you know, what you and I have experienced, what we know has been shown through research, through epidemiological studies, through randomized controlled trials on, you know, various specific processes in the body. And we could say, it's going to do better. The plant-based diet is going to do better. But now we know.
Yeah.
Now it's not a guess.
Yeah.
And not only that, now for the first time ever, we can say, look, the thing is, everybody who's coming into the treatment, into rehab, is seeing improved results. Because people typically enter very, very sick, either overfed and undernourished or underfed and undernourished, chemically dysregulated through substance abuse or through medication misuse. They're emotionally unstable. And so everybody for the first time is getting a sense of structure. They're getting a regular diet that is more nutrient dense, no matter which diet they get, than what they were doing before. They're off of their destructive substances. So everyone is seeing an elevation in their overall well-being. But the treatment diet, the plant-based diet, it's doing better. And I'm not surprised by it. And now it can't be, for the first time, we can say with confidence, this is what is happening.
Yeah. Are you guys able to measure, like, how much better it's doing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have validated scales of measuring every single outcome that we're looking at. Our primary outcome is resiliency. It's a scale called the Connor-Davidson Resiliency Scale. It was specifically designed to measure the effectiveness of PTSD treatment. Mm-hmm. And so what it really is how does whatever the treatment that you're using create a greater opportunity for the individual to confront a difficult situation and then move through it with positivity and grace and be able to make a greater future for themselves, to where when that situation arises again, they have tools. And so we're now seeing that diet isn't the only answer for it, but it creates an opportunity to have greater success. I'm just blown away that this study is finally coming together. We've been working on it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then to see the data, and just, you know, the data is great and I love it, but what really gets me going, what really fills my heart, is the qualitative stories. Somebody saying, I felt like I couldn't recover. This is my fourth time. And I felt broken. I felt like I'm just going to be a habitual rehab patient, constantly going in and out, like the revolving door individual. And now it's different. And I feel a greater connection to myself. I feel a greater spiritual connection to how I move through the world. I feel a greater connection to the natural world around me. And it's so funny because an individual is saying, and I never thought this would happen. I was convinced I was going to leave and eat pepperoni pizza. And now I feel like for the first time, I don't worry about what I eat and then have it have a negative impact on my view of how I view my body. Mm-hmm. There are people who have had issues with eating in order to, you know, and how they felt about their body. And now they have a loving relationship with what they put into their body and how it relates to the way that they feel about their body. Because one of the things that I know Tara and I are very passionate about is, you know, loving your body isn't so much what your body looks like. It's loving what your body does for you. And one of the things I find so empowering about a plant-based diet and recovery is that it very quickly gives you evidence that your body has never given up on you. It very quickly shows you that even in the worst of your moments, your body was like, I am going to fight like hell for you. Give me the environment to do it and you will be amazed. And I will love you like you've never been loved before. And that's what we're seeing so amazingly with the data, with the stories in the treatment diet.
I love that. Your body is never going to give up on you.
Never has.
Right?
If ever there's evidence of it, you take a very sick individual, you put them on a plant-based diet like we do at the retreats.
Yeah.
And in 3 days, their entire biometrics are different. If that's not evidence that the body's been fighting for them since day one.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what is, yeah. You know, it's like people think that their body is sick and you're trying to make it well. Your body is well, and it's trying to fight the disease. Yeah. And this is absolute evidence of that. You know, it's like your body has been sitting there, and you give it this opportunity, you give it this diet, you create this environment, and then you will hear this voice from inside of you saying, I've been waiting my whole life for this. And it's just the most, like, that the stories are what really hits home for me.
Yeah.
Because you could look at data all you want, and I'm glad we're going to have it, because academia, the research industry, they'll love it. But I want people to feel empowered. I want people to feel like they're learning to love themselves. I want people to feel like they're reconnecting to what makes life meaningful. Mm-hmm. Because that's what's going to allow them to have a life that they enjoy. And to be okay with the ups and downs. To experience pain and discomfort and sadness and still love it and appreciate it. See it for what it is. It's this like recognition that we are capable of such amazing, you know, breadth of emotion. There's a saying from an amazing person, and she says that grief is as sacred as joy. It is the receipt of having loved.
That's good.
And so, yeah. You know, if the diet can help people connect to that understanding, it's just unbelievable.
Well, that's a great update on everything that's going on. Yeah. Now, just to kind of tease people just a little bit, is there any chance that we'll be seeing a book from you in the future, and we can have you back on the podcast to talk about that?
It is in the works right now. So I got I'm working with a literary agent, an amazing literary agent who actually is Dr. B's literary agent, and working
for for people that haven't listened to that podcast yet. Yeah. Who is Dr. B?
So Dr. Will Bolshewitz wrote the book Fiber Fueled, and it is maybe the most comprehensive and best written book on gut health that I've ever read. And he has an amazing social media presence as well, where he does amazing Instagram lives and IGTVs and posts all the time. He's very dynamic. He's very intelligent, and he has an amazing ability to present his knowledge in a way that is absorbed easily by every single person.
Yeah. If you haven't listened to that podcast, go back about 4 or 5 episodes. You'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got a book coming down the pipe. We've got this study that is, you know, 6 months in, rolling along nicely.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to share with us that's extremely exciting that's going on in your life?
You know, I mean, just living every single day. You know,
living large, baby.
It, you know, the study is taking up a lot of my time. The book is now something new that I'm really excited about. Still working with Mastering Diabetes, and we're doing that. You know, doing that every single day. And if
I'm not mistaken, you'll be making an appearance at PlantStock.
Oh, yes. The shirt, by the way. Yes. PlantStock.
PlantStock 2020, baby.
PlantStock 2020. I can't wait. It's going
to
be great.
Virtually brought to you from the Esselstyn Family Farm.
Absolutely. I'm excited about it. It's a new ground, so we'll see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
These two are going to infinity and beyond to help people come out the other side of addiction and recovery well beyond just sobriety. If you're struggling, know that you are not unwanted and you are not forgotten. You are a whole person. And through the work of heroes like Tara and Adam, it is our hope that the path to rediscovering your wholeness starts with a whole food, plant-strong diet. To learn more, visit our show notes at plantstrongpodcast.com or plantbasedforpositivechange.org. We'll see you next week for another episode of the Plant Strong Podcast. The Plant Strong Podcast team includes Lori Kordowich, Amy Mackey, Patrick Gavin, Wade Clark, and Carrie Barrett. I want to thank my parents, Dr. Caldwell B. Esselstyn Jr. and Anne Kreil Esselstyn, for creating a legacy that will be carried on for generations, and being willing to go against the current and trudge upstream to the causation. We are all better for it. I want to personally invite you to join me and all the other Brock stars for this year's 13th live and in-person PlantStock event outside of Asheville, North Carolina, in the little town of Black Mountain. It's 1,500 acres, is loaded with wildlife, trees, trails, streams. It is a nature wonderland. And what's also a wonderland are all the incredible speakers that you get to hang with all weekend long, like Jane and Ann Esselstyn, Dr. Will Bolshewitz of Fiberfueled, Carly Bodrug, Miss Plant U, Dr. Gemma Newman is over from the UK. We have Dr. Dawn Musalem from the Mayo Clinic, John Mackey, the ex-CEO of Whole Food Market Stores, myself, Brian Hart, and a special appearance by the Plant Bros. Here's the kicker. All these Brock stars are there from Friday till Sunday, and they want to rub elbows with all of you, whether it's over buffets of plant strong fare for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, whether it's going on an afternoon hike, a swim, pickleball, frisbee golf, kickball, cornhole, dancing. We're having live music. It's all there in this fun weekend extravaganza that we affectionately call PlantStock. Simply go to liveplantstrong.com and then click on PlantStock 2024 and grab yourself a ticket before they sell out. See you there.